It's been a rollicking ride for Dave LaPepe and the members of Gang of Youths over the last few years. Since their debut album came out about 2 years ago, The Positions, to much acclaim, the group have gone on from being a garage band to a worldwide mega act that'll be performing at the Horden next month. With album number 2, Go Farther Into Lightness, just weeks away, we explore the path that Gang of Youths have taken and where they're heading in their second offering. We've got Dave LaPepe in the studio. Great to see you again, Dave.
Hi, Mick. Good to see you.
Thanks for coming down, Luke.
Thanks for repeating our very first interview.
This is right. Moment, almost yeah. two years to the day since we first chatted. You That's were in cool. a laneway in Sydenham at a rehearsal studio.
Yeah.
We were talking about the first album, and now the second
album. I like how you refer to us as a worldwide mega act, which is so far from the truth.
I like to think it is, and excuse me for maybe exaggerating and getting a little bit excited. In my head, you are a worldwide mega act.
In my head, we're still a shit-kicking garage rock band. So,
well, that's all right. Yeah. The fans and the musicians, somewhere in the middle, maybe where you are.
I don't know. I don't know if we can synthesize the two views here.
You've just returned from the States, where obviously you're spending a lot of time lately. Yeah. I know the situation with the visa for Jung and having to sort of be over there because he can't get a visa to
yeah,
Australia.
Yeah, so we actually moved to London. So we've been in London, but I've been in New York with my significant other as well. So I've sort of split my time between London and New York, which sounds glamorous, but it's fucking confusing all the time. But it's good. You know?
Yeah.
I get to be where I want to be, which is nice.
So what do you prefer, London, New York, Sydney?
At the moment it's New York because my significant yeah. person is there.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if there's a matter of prefer. I think wherever I have the people who matter most is where home is a cliche, but the boys are in London. So I think London's kind of where I want to be, and significant other's going to be there soon. So
okay, so yeah. London could be
I call it significant other because partly sounds like I'm a effing 50-year-old man with a new love in his life, and a girlfriend makes me sound like I'm 15 years old. So significant other can only encapsulate the significance of the relationship without going to wife. So.
Yeah, fair enough. For talking of labels, never shied away from the fact that your music is cathartic, and it's a word that comes back and back and back, and it's catharsis with your music, and we talked about it before, but you've described this album as a healing record after dealing with all of what you put out there in the first album. How does music do that to you? Or is it the process of writing it? Is it the process of singing it live? What is it about music?
It's really cool that you're asking me that question because you're someone who's seen my career pretty close up and far away for the past 2 years since The Positions, and I was in a really different position when we first met. And you're one of the very original people to ever really get on the band. So I think the best way for me to put it is the notion of expelling all the things inside of me that I'm unable to articulate in conversations with myself and with people.
But you're putting it out there for everybody.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just you're in your room writing something, singing, getting it out, frustrations out, like I would do in my room playing bass.
Yeah.
You're putting it, you're recording it, and you're releasing it to millions of people.
That's the beauty of what I'm doing in and of itself, because instead of just trying to convey things to one person and struggling, I'm conveying things to myself, taking the things I've conveyed to myself and immortalizing it in a certain way, and then presenting it to people in this context which I've designated myself. There is an element of control, an element of authority that I have over the excising of this stuff when you release it on record. That is sort of, in a primitive way, it's sort of easier to do that than it is to convey to someone one-on-one in the space of a moment. Yeah. And I think that's where this notion of catharsis is really important, because instead of lashing out at one person or myself in a moment, I'm able to, demonstrate all these feelings and emotions and communicate all these ideas en masse.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of the time we are afraid of being vulnerable to many, because the many are filled with a few who will judge and a few who will speak of us in a way that we find less than flattering.
Well, that's the danger, isn't it? You put it out there en masse, you're always going to get people who, you know.
But I'm the opposite of a risk-averse person. And I think the risk of risking it is significantly less scary to me than the risk of not risking. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I don't want to spend my life, and I don't want to I don't want to die one day with my life unexamined, unexplored, and unenthusiastic, you know.
And this is one of the reasons why you do have such a massive following, because people look at you and your honesty and your music and the way you put yourself out there, and that's what they love.
Maybe people are looking for someone who's willing to say what they're feeling, say what they're without fear of the ramifications.
So the record, it's a month away. I've had a couple of listens because I couldn't stop listening to it for the last 24 hours.
You spent 78 minutes long, so you spent 156.
Nearly clocks on 80 minutes, the album. And it's beautifully produced.
I wanted to feel cinematic, you know. I wanted it to be almost movie length.
And you always mentioned in the first album that you wanted to make these really long songs, and the record company was sort of like, yeah.
The record company were really cool about it this time.
Yeah?
Yeah, they're usually really awesome. It's just, it's honestly a matter of trying to balance expectations and commercial realities with my desire to be a self-indulgent asshole.
No. When I used to buy CDs back in the day, you know, Use Illusion 1 and 2 were like 70 minutes plus
exactly,
each.
Yeah, okay.
And I was like, this is it. I'm getting all of the money for my buck. Because it costs a lot of money to go and buy CDs.
It's our obsession with content. We like neat little sound bites. We like content. We want clickbait, clickable, easily digestible snippets of half of an emotion that is, you know, built and repurposed and borrowed from other shit. That's our desire now in so many ways.
Yeah.
So I think anything that sort of defies this logic seems strange to us. But you said Use Your Illusion. I mean, there were two massive records.
Yeah.
Technically one, I guess. But, you know, it's interesting, like, when we think about the course of popular music, album-oriented rock had this huge moment in the 70s and 80s.
Hmm.
You know, radio stations weren't afraid to play Bohemian Rhapsody. They weren't afraid to play Born to Run.
Yeah.
That's just...
Play the full-length versions. I used to get the shits when they'd cut November Rain at the end. I was like, come on. Exactly.
Dude, but that's the problem I think that we're facing. Like, we are longing for things that are meaningful, but we don't have the attention span.
Oh, the irony.
To ingest meaningful things a lot of the time. And, you know, having a 3.5-4 minute song that encases the majority of what you're desiring to say is cool.
Yeah.
We just chose not to do that way. You know, it's just how we want it. Like, yeah. I'm a long-winded, laborious person to be around generally. Like, it's not any surprise that the record itself is almost 80 minutes long, full of all the stark intellectualism that I seem to, like, emanate without even meaning to some of the time.
You know? But I think it's a fact, and it's a reason that people go to your music is because they know they're going to get a journey within a song, you know, and it goes from starting out at a soft piano bit, as the first track does, building up to a huge crescendo, you know, and it's that story within the song.
The story within the story,
and
yeah.
Then you've got the album. Like, you've got a lot of these orchestral bits in the album, which and it's the first one, L'Imaginaire.
L'Imaginaire, yeah.
And what is that tune? I know what it is. It's killing me. Oh, is it really? It freaking is. Oh, my God. I'm so embarrassed right now. I didn't realize it was there. I'm an idiot.
Wow, sweet child of mine.
Which is your earliest memory, right?
Yep.
And I know that, but I can't believe that I didn't pick that in the orchestral violin prelude to the next song. I was like, what is this? Why is it in my head? Is it some sort of fancy French track that I didn't know about? Oh, God.
Two of the succeeding tracks from the interlude are about children dying. One is about a dream I had about, my wife and child dying in a horrible car accident and me identifying their bodies and waking up. It's a recurring dream. And then the other one's about my best friend, Dave, his wife, Kelly, lost their baby at 8.5 months. Her name was Emmy Grace, and that happened the week I got divorced.
Mm.
So that song in and of itself has so much like historical poetry for me in my own life, but also thematically as well. It's something important to me. It's a song I'm going to sing to my kids when they go to sleep.
Yeah. Maybe the orchestral version.
Yeah, definitely. But I wanted people to get a familiar sense initially, and I wanted people to rack their brains trying to pick it, you know. No, but that's what a good record does. It makes you frustrated, and that somehow you don't
you're not getting it, but you're getting it. I mean, that's,
yeah. And I got it, and I liked it, and I just didn't pick
appreciate
it.
That.
And the sound of the album does incorporate a lot of orchestral stuff into a lot of the songs, as the first one did too. But you've amped it up. I think you know.
I wanted to ensure that people listening to the record understood where we're coming from. Always.
Yep.
And I wanted to express my inner desire to connect with my dad in a way. And my dad loved classical music.
Yeah.
Still loves classical music. That's how I grew up. So I wanted to reiterate that part of myself in the record and give listeners a breather in between all the fucking enormous amounts of information.
Yep, yep.
They were getting, you know.
Yeah, I can see where you come from there. Joji was going to be here, and it was his birthday the other day, and I was going to ask him, but I can ask you as well about. I know he uses a crap load of pedals, and he does.
I don't know anything about them, man. I'm sorry.
I guess
I do not know.
Oh no, I was going to ask him about the difference between the delicate guitars and then the all encompassing chords, and anyway, how he sort of just went about that.
He's
but,
the guy. I'm not going to answer.
That's
that,
all right. That's all right. All right, we'll move on to your live show. Because you are playing the Horde next month, and it's a huge venue. We saw you here at the Loft at 2SCR 2 years ago. Playing.
That was when we weren't even able to fill out an Oxford Art Factory.
Well, you did, but you got Oxford Art Factory, then you moved up before you did the Enmore.
Yeah.
And now it's like that logical step. Okay, we're going to go to the Horde now. It's a big stage. It's going to be a sold-out crowd. What do you feel like? It's going to be a biggest show in Australia yet. I'd say your biggest headlining show. You talked about loving that egalitarianism of playing live music to people. How do you connect to people when you're on a big stage like that? Is it really hard?
Yeah. I feel like a traitor to my class. I do. I feel like a class traitor.
But it's that rush you get, right? I mean, because the more people that are there, the bigger the event, the bigger the feeling.
That's a good feeling, but sometimes I'm scared that I'm going to lose that sense of... lose the sense of the delicate balance you need to maintain when you're in a smaller crowd.
Yeah.
The sense of urgency, the desire to impress almost. Sometimes I feel like you're inheriting a ready-made atmosphere, and it can sometimes, if you do that for long enough, can make you fucking complacent. If you're playing big crowds and big shows for long enough, it will turn you into that.
Hmm.
Sometimes I'm afraid of that happening. And I've seen it happen with countless other artists. The legendary ones even.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's ones like Bruce Springsteen who can do it.
Yeah,
and do
yeah.
it magnificently well. They do it with a profundity and an urgency. Like I said before, an urgency that they did earlier on in their career to the small crowds. And there's some who falter and it seems impersonal and distant and detached and pretentious and egomaniacal and self-glorifying and self-gratifying. And
so do you think about this a lot? Do you think about...
Always.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm constantly thinking about ways that my career is going to suffer. Always. I'm always thinking about the worst case scenario. I'm going to say or do something that'll ruin it all. But I don't want to be... I don't want to be so elevated in terms of like our status or whatever as a band that I can't look at someone in an audience and try and feel them and understand them.
Yeah.
And try to identify with them. There's a huge risk in that. That's a big fear.
Yeah.
So playing a lot of these small rooms in the United States and Europe and Britain has been pretty healing. You know, it sort of reinvigorated my desire to keep playing. You know, because after a while, after you reach a certain point in your home country, you sort of run the risk of becoming stagnant.
Mm. Well, it's great that you get the opportunity to do that. And were you just doing like solo shows over in small rooms and stuff?
No, playing full band.
Full band stuff, fantastic.
That's the way to do it. That's how we started out, and that's how we'll continue to do it. I mean, people are always fascinated. They always wrote about us. So they play, for better or for worse, we got some terrible live reviews early on. It's like they're playing to a stadium and they're only playing to 30 people.
What? How's that? That's not a negative, right?
A lot of people use that as a negative. You have no idea. A lot of people did. But I like to think it's the inverse. I like to think that we're always playing like we're playing in front of 30 people.
Yeah.
Sometimes we play in front of 30 people, but we're really playing to 20,000 at Splendor. Yeah. But the desire to connect with the 30 people is still there.
Yeah.
You know, I just have to figure out ways to amplify that.
Sure.
You know, to become more democratic.
Well, you're going to be playing to all the listeners on 2SCR in just a second. We're going to hear a bit of a solo acoustic track from Dave LaPepe. Which track are you going to give us today?
The song's called The Deeper Size
the Frankest Shadows.
Fantastic. Yep. Any story behind the song?
Yeah, I was after I wrote Magnolia, I had writer's block for about a year, and I was back in New York, hanging out with my sister and trying to lay low and recover from like pretty aggressive touring and what the position's turned into, and you know, still reeling from my divorce and like. Yeah, it had been a really, really weird time. And I got really drunk and stumbled home across the Brooklyn Bridge. And after all this writer's block, I was sort of starting to question whether or not my career mattered, whether or not I mattered, whether or not there was any, you know, any discernible point to doing this. And I came to the conclusion radically that there was not, that I was wasting my time, that I should do something more substantial for humanity, more substantial for myself, and stop wasting people's time. And, you know, stop leading my best friends on a wild goose chase for success and infamy that I couldn't possibly provide them because I was terrible. Legitimately thought these things. And all these fears about, you know, my cosmology, my ontology, my lack of meaning, all these things amassed into something that was quite overbearing and scary. And then stumbling home across the Brooklyn Bridge, I gazed over the New York City skyline, over downtown, shining over the East River, and I had this kind of brief moment looking at these pretty lights, and sort of remembered that it was okay that I was terrified, and that there probably isn't a point.
Yeah.
I have to make one up.
Yep, we all do.
Yeah, and so I did, and I made one up. I invented a point, and it worked.
We've got Dave LaPippi live in the 2SER studios here. He's going to play a live track for us right now. It's Deepest Sighs, Frankest Shadows. You're on 2SER.
There's a sky full of light, and none of them stars. Each white silvery flicker is a faithful reminder to us of a weight that's in youth that makes a dick of a soul. And if it happened today, then it's probably happened before. And a crowd unfamiliar just wanna touch your familiar face and make friends at the parties. I fear the likes of an age. To be wanted with truth, make formidable love. See light in myself that I see inside everyone else I know. It's not a lacking of spine, nor a physical pulse. It's just a feeling of distance akin to a feeling of loss. Of love in the youth of my limited life. And a past and a violent and ritual screwing inside. And the years unfamiliar, made of increasingly digital days. But I am grieving the loss of myself with frightening malaise. With this weight that's in youth, and the sum of it small. Just stand in the darkness and laugh with your heel on its throne. Not everything means something, honey. So say the unsayable, say the most human of things. If everything is temporary, I will bear the unbearable, terrible triteness of being alone in my heart. Frozen away. But don't get me wrong now, honey, I'm okay.
and a lacking of spine, nor a physical pulse. It's just a feeling of distance akin to a feeling of loss. And we're pushing a stone up a mountainous waste, and the lines in the store look like lines on a beautiful face. See, I'm not so assured, nor unusually strong, or outstandingly brave. I'm more just fumbling around in the dark for the bulk of my day. When there's weight that's in you, and the sum of it's small, I will stand in the darkness and laugh with my heel on its throat. Everything means something, honey. So say the unsayable, say the most human of things. If everything is temporary, I will bear the unbearable, terrible triteness of being alone in my house, frozen in time. But don't get me wrong now, honey, I am trying. Oh, pass me light, oh honey, cast me light. Won't you feel me tonight? Goddamn, do you feel? Cast me a light, oh honey, pass me a light. Won't you feed me tonight? Goddamn, do you feed me tonight? And not everything means something, honey. So say the unsayable, say the most human of things. If everything is temporary, I will bear the unbearable, terrible triteness of being.
Dave, thanks so much for coming down to OCR.
You are absolutely welcome, mate. It's an honour to be back, especially after, you know, your first interview with me, and I appreciate you always being there for it. Thanks.
Always, always. Thanks, and mate. Can't wait to... Everyone to hear this album. I'm holding it tight to my chest right now because I just like it's mine. I'm listening to it. And but of course it's going to be out publicly August the
18th.
Just a month away.